Blog Talk Radio.
All right, you're listening to The Unknown Show. I'm Bud Smith. We have four people coming on the show tonight: Robert Vaughn, Michael Dix, Dennis Lee, and Court Bledsoe. So it should be a really good time. Stay tuned. Well, yeah, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Yeah, this is pretty much rounding up the last batch of shows for a while. It's been a really great run lately. But summertime is creeping in, springtime is creeping in, and, man, the fucking weather is getting nice out there. So, yeah, I hope everybody's doing good. I hope everything's going really good. Things are pretty badass over here. We got a really cool show coming up tonight. We'll be talking to Robert Vaughn first, and Robert Vaughn is he's a writer. He's always got some really great stuff brewing, stuff coming out. His recent full length is Attics and Basements, out from Civil Coping Mechanisms, and Robert's just he's got a few other things that happened this year: Diptychs and Triptychs, out from Deadly Chaps, and he's the head flash fiction editor at JMWW, and he does Lost in Thought magazine. And he recently had a short story that was a finalist for the Gertrude Stein Award for 2014. So, with that, I'd like to welcome Robert on the show again. How you doing, man? What's going on?
Hey, bud. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm drinking coffee, you know? Yeah.
Excellent. Good for you, getting all amped up.
It doesn't do anything for me anymore. You know.
Oh, it doesn't?
No, I can drink coffee like as I'm laying down to sleep. But I just,
oh wow, that's amazing! I'm always shocked that people can drink coffee before they fall asleep. I'm one of those people. Caffeine really affects me, so if I have coffee, I have to cut myself off from it, like by I would say 2:30 or 3 in the day, because otherwise I'm kind of up and you know I'm going okay. What am I supposed to write at midnight? You know, I can't do it too late in the day, but other than that, you know, I have to have that morning fix.
Gotta have that morning fix, man. You gotta. So,
yep.
So yeah, congratulations on Action Basement. I've seen it's been getting some really good press lately. Kirkus Review recently had a really good write-up on the book, and exciting stuff.
Yeah, I was really pleasantly surprised by the Kirkus Review because, you know, they always they give you this, like, kind of strange little email where it says, we cannot guarantee that it's going to be a favorable review, you know, and it's like, you know, they put this verbiage in there where you're like, oh, crap, somebody's going to say what they hate about it. You know, you always think the worst, of course.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, even more so than the Kirkus, I have to say that, you know, when friends of mine, like this Mark Kerstetter, he's a poet, and I knew him, actually, I met him through the fiction art writing community a couple years ago. Exchanged some, you know, favorable, positive things to say about one another's work there. And, you know, his review just popped up. He bought the book and then, you know, read it, and all of a sudden he just shot me this link yesterday saying, hey, it's up on my blog, you know. And to me, that's even more heartfelt, you know, just someone sort of interpreting what the book meant to them through their own words and through poetic verse, you know, and I was just blown away by what he had posted. It just really, really touched me. So I have to thank Mark for that. And yeah, suddenly now everything's kind of coming about with, it takes a, you know, this is one of the things that's such a learning curve for me, but it takes a good 6 to 8 weeks with people starting to go, okay, now the book has settled in. And, you know, people are starting to give it some nice attention, which is great. I'm very grateful.
Yeah, yeah. It doesn't happen. It doesn't happen right away, which is maybe the, you know, mistake of, like, you're talking about a learning curve, like if somebody's putting a book out, and this is like your third release in just about 2 years. So you've, you're kind of, getting attuned to the waters, you know, kind of how it goes with this whole waiting game, you know. Like you're saying, all of a sudden you start seeing things popping up, and that's something that's really great. When at first it's like a brand new person putting their first title out, it might be like traumatizing because it's like radio silence, you know. But you know,
yeah, that's a great term. Yeah, radio silence, you know? Is correct. Sure. Yeah, and I think, you know, I think one of the things that really did help me out is going back to like Fictionaut, and there was a community before that that was called 52250. I think I've mentioned that on your show before, you know, 52
yeah.
different weeks of the year and then 250 words or less. It was a free membership, and people just shot pieces up once a week, and there were three editors, Michelle Elvey and a couple other folks who just, you know, really gave it their all every week to kind of edit down the pieces and give suggestions. And it was a great schooling, but also that's where I met some of my continuous writer support, people that I really admire, Len Kuntz and Meg Tuitt, and you know, all these different people that played in that little playground first and then went on to Fictionaut or other places back in 2010. So it really was exceptional to be able to kind of gain readership through that, so that when I came out with Microtones back in 2012, it wasn't like, what am I going to do with this now? You know, there was a certain amount of people that I could expect hopefully would read it, you know, so that...
Sure.
I really do recommend that with people that are thinking about going the publishing route, that if it's your truth that you want to go in that direction, once you find a good house, spend a little time trying to get some places where your readership is developed by putting your work up through the online communities, you know, getting either published through the different online journals or even, you know, the journals that come out in print or whatever. Just do a little bit of that, because then you're already setting the pace for people to anticipate something. Like your great, you know, book of poetry that just came out. People had read some of your poems through different networks, you know, and then they're like, ooh, this Everything Neon, I got to get a copy of that, you know. So I think that's always the great way to go.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, like you're talking about, like, these playgrounds that kind of pop up. Like, you know, it's interesting, you thought about 5250, and that was, like, dated back a few years, and maybe, like, you know, people kind of migrated to Fictionaut, and, you know, the migration continues. The new playgrounds keep popping up, and it's always interesting to keep an ear kind of to the wall of, like, okay, where are the cool kids going, or where are the people who don't know they're the cool kids yet going, you know, and you can kind of, like, fish around and see where these new communities are popping up, because I remember that back in 2006, MySpace was that way.
Yes,
like
exactly.
This,
that's where a lot of
great,
the people
vibrant
that
vibrant ring, you know.
Yeah, it was a great community, and I especially think that really appealed to, I know we've talked about this, but people that have the music background too. You know, people that kind of came into writing through music or writing music or lyrics or, you know, being in bands or that whatever. I mean, MySpace was so cool back in the day, you know, and I think it just kind of evolved, like people that chose, okay, not that you can't play both, not that you can't be in both camps, you know, but
sure.
But people that evolved a little bit more online into the writership aspect of creativity, yeah, they followed sort of this trail, and I think you're right. I think there are, I mean, one of the new places that I love to play is this site called Entropy. You know, there's some real fun young guns in there that are doing some great stuff, different things on, I mean, a lot of it is stuff that I can't necessarily relate to with the video game write-ups and even, you know, live games that are happening right now. I love the characterization of them, but I don't play them. So, but there's a lot of different things that they're covering in that, as well as reviews, you know, reviews, literary reviews and things. So people should check Entropy out. I know that you've been on the site before, and they did do a write-up. Peter Tierras, I think it's Tierras, he did a write-up, a really lovely write-up of Attics and Basements there about a week and a half ago. So it's a relatively new site, but it's got some great content.
Yeah, Janice Lee, one of the editors, Peter's co-editor, she'll be on the show at...
That's right. Yeah,
she'll be on the show.
Exactly, Janice is coming on. Yeah, so she can talk more about Entropy for sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. We'll get her to talk more about Entropy. But you know, I'm curious. We're talking about a playground. So you do a lot of in-person playground with your roundtables. You get together with people and pick apart writings and do critiques circles. Do you have any recent new thoughts on the practice of that? I'm sure you get revelations all the time with that kind of thing.
One of the things that I feel I have gained from leading a couple of different writing groups is I think that I have a certain element of objectivity. You know, I can, you know, writers can join the roundtable in any genre. They can be writing memoir, they can be writing essays, fiction, poetry.
Yeah.
It doesn't really, we don't specify. And
yeah.
And one of the things that I love, first of all, is I really just call myself a timekeeper. I kind of feel like I just hold the space, so to speak, for
yeah.
the voices to be put into the circle. And what I feel is like I learn as much from what everyone says in terms of commenting
yep.
on other writers as they do from, you know, what the you know, I kind of do the wrap-up of each piece before we move on to the next. But I just sort of feel like I feel so fortunate that I'm exposed to so many different writers who willingly take a risk by putting your work into that circle. And then the nice thing is I'm also workshopping with a couple of online groups, too. So some of the pieces that I personally feel like I want to get more work out of, I don't take pieces into the groups that I actually lead, but I am a
yeah.
part of a writer's circle here in Milwaukee where I am a writer, too. I bring my pieces into that group. But I also have a couple of online, more experimental, I would say, places where I can kind of really go for expertise, feedback with a few of my writer friends online as well. And I find both are really useful. I'm not the kind of person, I know there are people out there who just say, like, I do my own editing and I know how to, like, rewrite my own work just for my own scope. But I really benefit from more than just the pair of my eyes being on my work, I think. And I don't think I modify it so much vastly from what the feedback is as much as just gaining the different perspectives on the actual piece, you know?
That's the thing. That's the magic ticket. I think sometimes when I hear people get in a little, like, defensive about the idea of critiques and stuff, and it's like, you know, without getting into the whole in-depth thing about what, you know, critiques are and what they are, it's like, it's just what you said. It's just somebody else's perspective, you know.
Yeah.
And you were talking about some really cool stuff with, you know, your more experimental side of writing. What's going on with that? And that brings us right back to Attics and Basements. I was curious if I could get you to read some pieces from it.
I would love to. That would be great. Did you have any specific piece in mind, or do you want, you know, how do you want to do that? Did you want me to choose, or what do you feel?
Yeah,
what are you feeling?
Why don't you pick like two of them that you'd like to read now? I know you're probably getting burnt out from doing all the reading from the book, but maybe two that you're not getting sick of reading yet. You know what I mean?
Okay. I'm trying to think. Yeah, I'll read one that's a little bit more, because we talked about experimental, so I'll read one that's a little bit more out there and then one that's kind of just more sort of narrative. So this first one is called Three Episodes. One, myopic. He was myopic, intertwined in his tunnel vision, able to see only what was directly in front of him, and even that was a slight exaggeration. He had elevated blood pressure that turned his hair orange. He left his medication in the credenza, forgot he could not tolerate traffic. His corpuscles screamed, "How could you?" feeling betrayed and forgotten. When his cab driver had a flat on the way to JFK, he screamed. He was already late and Brianna did nothing to help him. Didn't lift one finger, not one iota. Two, chains. They sat in the lapses of attention focused on the nostrils of the other. One sat sideways, juxtaposed, the only prevention of physical interaction. Brianna stared out the tiny window of the aircraft into the amorphous shape, a vacation that felt like a first day at a new job. She'd expected something different, this empty nest. He blathered, "Seems so much more primitive." She found her mother wandering around in between their houses in a daze. "It woke me out of a deep sleep. Beth felt it. Didn't you feel it?" Brianna paused. "Every time I say yes, you do." He ignored her, wasn't getting drawn into the blame game. Beth heard people yelling below her, "I'm trapped! I'm trapped!" enough about Beth already. He looked at her as if to say, excuse me, but have we had sex before? 3. Mission. While on vacation, they made their missionary plans for October. Beth graduated, and he went through the roof when she told them about her condition. In the aircraft to Uruguay, she had a baby, stillborn. They didn't even know about the other one, stayed inside for a week. Brianna called the biological father during their layover in Dallas. Billy said, where was I during all this? Wake up, moron, Brianna said. Gotta go. The plane nearly crashed into the Gulf of Mexico with few survivors. It was the turbulence. Brianna looked from one parent to the other. Within each glance, a mockery. Some person stuck in the fuselage stared at her. So what makes you more masculine, Brianna wondered. She shit when she heard them announce the president's name. Brianna hid her private parts in disgust.
Yeah. Hid in disgust. I hear that.
Actually, I realized when I was reading this that I think Nate Tower, who is a great writer, friend of ours, he had this project that he was doing the bulk of last year, which were like the dirtiest stories or something like that. And I did actually send this to him, so he read this one on that project. I remembered, actually, after I started it, I was like, oh, yeah, Nate read this even better than I ever could.
He did it while juggling, too, probably, you know.
I think so, yeah. He juggles and reads at the same time. He's got some sort of record, I do believe. So anyhow, that was originally published at a place, I have to say, any of you experimental writers that haven't published at BlazeVox, BLAZE, capital VOX, BlazeVox, they love the weirdest stuff. So send them your submissions.
All right, I wrote that down too, Robert. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, give me another one.
Okay, so this one is called Hummingbirds. The day is carved out like a pumpkin, slit open for visitors. My question is, when am I perfect, and will you be looking the other way? Here is a sparrow bone to stand in for me. Carry it like the look you gave me when you wanted me naked in meadows under the meteorites. Tonight we missed the moment to marry, the ring slipping into an imperceptible freedom as we spiral into our own potential. Why do you say it's too dangerous? It's like any slide, like any roller coaster. You're strapped in. Here we are, hands free. Watch me. What is danger, anyhow? Over breakfast this morning, Dana told me hummingbirds represent the number 8, infinity. Their wings flapping so quickly they create this symbol. They dart and dance, and one even perched on an inert limb. I told her I'd heard a story once in which a hummingbird went crazy on an intruder. Within a second, poked both his eyes out. We've been here before, you and me, haven't we? The first time we danced in a fist of a writhing crowd. The first time we kissed in a bowl of neglect. If we could take into consideration how many lives our thoughts and actions impact, now I know I see you everywhere, as if you've flown away and looped back 100 times.
That's probably the most beautiful piece of writing in the book, which I haven't leashed. That was my personal opinion on hummingbirds. So the book is out from Civil Coping Mechanisms.
Is out from Civil Coping Mechanisms, yep. Michael Seidlinger is a brilliant publisher.
He's a good dude, too. Got a pretty goddamn good attitude, you know?
He's a great guy. He's also a really talented writer and has some projects coming out that are, you know, coming pretty soon. But, the Hummingbirds poem came about, actually, you know, for those listeners who are not into workshops, I have to say this one came from, I was really fortunate, my buddy Meg Tewitt and I went through a workshop last summer at Esalen, which is on the west coast, south of San Francisco, and this hummingbird thing, Dana was our neighbor in the beautiful little building that Meg and I stayed in, And we had a conversation about hummingbirds. So that literally went into the poem. Part of the exercise that day was to take something from real life and stick it in there and try to figure out how to build around it. And so she did really tell me that hummingbirds represent infinity or whatever, and then I made up the stuff about poking eyes out and blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, you know, like I workshopped this poem there and then kind of came away from it and decided to stick it in the collection. So workshops for me really are useful. I try to pick one. I'm actually going to be going to Omega this year, which is up above New York City, and studying for a weekend with Richard Blanco, who was the inaugural poet, I think, for Obama's second thing, you know, inauguration or whatever. So I'm psyched for that. That'll be cool. And my buddy Michael Maxwell is going to join me there. So MGM and Robert are going to create some new shit.
No, you have to. You have to. It's law.
Yeah, it should be really fun.
Well, you know, I'm eagerly anticipating the next Robert Vaughn collection. I heard you're writing a book of short stories, Arrival and Departures. There's the working title.
Yeah, I'm working on the stories. Some a little bit longer, some shorter. You know, similar to the style of some of the stories in Attics and Basements, but I'm going to mix the tempo up, and hopefully it'll be coming out sometime around AWP next year if all things move forward as they're supposed to. So.
Well, more power to you. Thank you for coming on again, Robert. It's always a pleasure, man.
Thanks, man. I really, really appreciate it, bud. And you enjoy the rest of the show. Have a blast.
You too, man. Later. All right. Well, next on the show, we're going to talk to Mr. Michael Dix. Mike is a New York City guy like me. He's a writer, composer, and filmmaker. His stories have been published pretty widely. Metazen, Thunderclap, Connotation, Thumbnail, Blue Fifth Review. All these are all great websites. People listening, looking for places to send your stuff out submission-wise. There's a great list right there. Michael Dix is also the founding editor of Awkward Paper Cut, which has a .com, awkwardpapercut.com, but also I'm a real big fan of the podcast, so check that out. And Mike's big into Buddhism, too, so welcome to the show. here we go. See, Mike, how you doing, man?
Hey, brother. Doing good.
What are you up to?
Well, you know, just standing around chewing on a toothpick, shit like that.
I get the impression that like takes up a lot of your time, just like, you know, chewing on toothpicks, like leaning on walls, like, you know, that's like stuff I'm into too, you know. I'll just go.
Well,
just like,
you know, man, I don't think I'm alone in the group of people, a lot of which happen to be writers, artists, whatever, that you know, will lean against a windowsill and kind of disappear through the glass, you know. And I've been like that since I was a kid. I don't know where I picked up chewing on toothpicks, and I mean, that's all bullshit anyway, so whatever.
it's a hobby.
It doesn't
matter. It's a hobby, you know. What else are you going to do? So,
you know, it's either that or...
What's going on with Awkward Paper Cut these days? It's such a vibrant spot on the dial. What's the word?
Well, I tell you what, man. There's a lot going on. We just wrapped up our first writing contest, and you know, I didn't even think about it. It didn't hit me until today that this was our 12th issue this month. And you know, it's been like that for a year. You know, sometimes I have to ask myself, now, why did you start this?
Yeah.
Because it really, you know, it's an all-consuming thing. And you know, between the stuff that I write and the podcasts, it's definitely a creative output. But good God, it's all time-consuming. But, you know, we've accomplished so much in just a year with zero funding at this point, you know. A little bit ad revenue, but... Writers on Writing with Michelle Elvey is just consistently really cool. You know, she'll interview writers from around the world, and they'll pick a topic and they'll discuss it. So it gives other writers or people that love to read or listen to stories, you know, kind of gives them, you know, kind of an insight to how other people are doing it. Swoon's View is something that Mark Nies from Belgium puts on every month, where he features video poetry, short films, and especially, you know, stuff that's really outside of the box. It's just amazing how much video poetry and spoken word film has changed. You know, it's really blown wide open. And now's a good time for it because, you know, if you take into consideration the pace at which most people have to, you know, run through their lives these days, these short little great videos, I think it's their time is ripe right now.
Oh,
so that's very cool. And, of course, the podcast, you know, I didn't know how that was going to work. It's somewhat of an odd duck. It's definitely a different approach, which I think is good, and I'm really happy with how it's turned out. The listenership on that between the various servers and once I got it up on iTunes, that's just gone crazy. So it's very cool.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know. You get it out there and just watch it grow, and it's like, oh, my God, look at that. That happened. So you know, but you touched on something interesting there. It's like, you know, how do you juggle? How do you juggle all these projects? How do you keep them all going? You know, you got to keep the energy there, to keep everything interesting enough to carry everything on. You know, that's something that.
Well, you know, there's just a wealth of material out there from. You know, independent writers that are, you know, somewhat known, but, you know, so many people that don't have a lot of outlets, especially if they're writing stuff that's out of the norm. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to start Awkward Paper Cut, you know, to have a place for my stuff to go and to connect with other like-minded writers and filmmakers and you know, artists in general that are, you know, fearlessly devoted to their own voice. And I hold that in high regard, man. You know, somebody that's willing to ignore the rules if they have to and follow their gut. And we need more of that, I think.
Yeah, I think it's really cool you're talking about, you know, following your gut and doing weird, bizarre writing and weird, bizarre filmmaking. That's what interests me. You're talking about the attention span that keeps getting smaller and smaller. And,
You know, what's even cooler is, you know, if you can write stuff that is outside of the box, beyond the status quo, that, okay, you can say it's weird or it's odd, but if you can make it accessible, right? So you've got you know, how can I deliver these words in a fashion that touches people, that makes somebody feel something, right? So that's the challenge, and that's the drive that you know makes me work through the middle of the night, which seems to be my habit for the last couple of years. It's just, you know, searching for that energy, you know, and once you get in that groove, you know, you're a writer, you know. I mean, how many times have you got into a piece, you're leaning over your keyboard, and you're just into it, you're with it, man, you know, and before you know it, you look up and it's 6 hours later and you've got to pee and you feel like shit because you're completely wasted, right?
Yeah.
then you have to go lie down, right? And then you get up and you feel good about what you did.
Yeah. So that's it. That's it for a T. You know, we're talking about so much stuff right here. I'm curious if I can get you to read. I'm trying to get everybody to read tonight. I don't know if it's going to work out. Are you into reading any of your writing you got floating around?
Yeah, I can read something. I mean, if you want me to.
Yeah, I do. Why don't you read a couple things, man?
All right. Let's see. Let me get a swig of water. I'll put down my toothpick, and we'll just kind of see what happens. All right, this is called Naoki Kyoto. Deeper, farther, faster, longer. She must scale heights where her brother did not, where her father told her she could not. Deeper, farther, faster, longer. She dove to the low end, gutting the A-flat, pressing her eyes, climbing back to the bridge, sliding, sticking. Her charging crescendo exploded triumphant at the final bar of three-quarter notes. Fell like raw powder. Ashes of silence. Swept with the dust on the cold theater floor. Square to the body and wide at the cuffs, a pink satin shirt hung loose on her frame, with orchids embroidered along the crisp edges. The mandarin collar and flesh interrupted by a single white strand torn from her bow, fixed in the sweat on her flat, bony chest. The victory echoed and blew into whispers as the watchers who witnessed, forgetting to breathe, rose to applaud for all that was true. She stood gracefully wasted, bathed in the acceptance, in the face of her past, hailed by her father, in witness of her prodigious brother. Naoki Kyoto eyed the pianist, leaned into the encore with focused attention on the face of her father, who sat with her brother in the center front row. A lifetime of yearning to sit there beside them came out through her bow to the strings and the fingerboard. Sewn into the costumes and the acts of rebellion, for better or worse, they were all cries for attention. A childhood injury made it difficult for her to land the arpeggios, so she mastered the hunger that moans in the slow notes, like she mastered the smiles when asked of her brother, the famous young cellist with the world on a string. She mastered the silence bestowed by her father, patron of nothing, if not the silence. And she mastered her own right to shine in the bright lights of a city that held her in the arms of a borough where she lived all alone. At the end of the concert, she bowed to her father. She bowed to her brother. With the applause, she inwardly folded, for no hands met from either who knew of her secret, that the notes there presented had been played by a man.
I like the way you read, too. It's like you're, you know, definitely doing a performance. So some people read and just, you know, zone out. But you do a good job, man. You really do.
Yeah, you know, I worked in radio for quite a few years.
How long were you doing that?
About 7 years. You know, and when I first started, I was fortunate to work with some old-timers.
Yeah.
That, you know, they came from the old school of broadcasting. And let's see, how does it go? The one guy said, you know, when trying to learn how to enunciate, he said, look, get yourself a small bag of marbles. Put them all in your mouth and keep reading this page over and over again. You can spit a marble out when you make it all the way through. And when you've lost all your marbles, then you know you're ready for radio.
That's great.
Ta-da! Yeah. So,
that's fantastic. So, yeah, man, I also read here, I mean, we've hung out in person and everything, but I'm reading your bio. It's fucking awesome. You're teaching mindfulness and meditation in the city here. You want to talk a little bit about that? And your given Dharma name, which is, how do you pronounce your given Dharma name here?
In Sanskrit, it's Buddhasya Gita.
Nice.
And it essentially means, I mean, it doesn't translate perfectly, but it represents Song of the Buddha.
Uh-huh.
And, I want to note that I'm not a Buddhist, per se.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's just, that's fine. It's just that Buddhism comes the closest to the truth that I've found so far. And it's not about religion. It's just about the truth.
Sure.
That's what I'm after.
Yeah.
For many years, really most of my life, I've been somewhat of a contemplative person. Not in a negative or dwelling way. I mean, that happens. But fiercely curious. I've always wanted to know how things work. As a kid, much to the chagrin of my parents, I would take apart, the old clock radios to see how they worked, and, I'd take apart my bike and, my Evel Knievel wind-up motorcycle and G.I. Joe with Kung Fu Grip, lost it to my dad's barbecue. That was pretty sad. So, I mean, that was my first experience with true suffering. And, all this stuff is about transcending suffering, right? And I've just followed that path in search of finding out who I am and how the world, how the universe works, how everything works. Once you reach one stepping stone and you gather a seed or two and you put it in your pouch and you keep on going, it's a continuous path of the next step and going deeper and farther with the ultimate goal of just attaining the sense of I'm all right. This is cool. No matter what.
Cool.
What comes, I'm on my rope, I'm walking my line, I dig it, and nothing's really going to knock me off. So I like to teach it and talk about it and share it because it's hard to describe without sounding like a hippie. Or sounding I'm sitting underneath
magic
a crystal.
Or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. But all I can say is, if you're not taking time just to sit quietly every day and sort of, trying to work your way into the center of who you are, If you think that you can't do that or you don't need it or you're not interested, and I'm not saying you, but I mean just you, anybody.
Sure.
If you're wary of it or you think it's all bullshit, I guarantee you, you're crazy. There's nothing difficult about it. I tell you
how do you do it?
You'll need to come down to a class or something, and we'll get you rocking and rolling.
All right.
Buddha bud. Buddha
bud. The thing is, like you just mentioned, you can say this stuff, and if somebody's at all not open-minded. Yeah, you sound like a fucking hippie sitting under a magic crystal. But I found, you know, even just like you're talking about, just sitting quietly, mindfulness, you know, the old George Harrison trick, be here now or whatever, right?
Yeah.
There's no harm in that.
Nope. And, you know, for the artistic people, you know, if you want to really learn how to expand your reach of creativity, that's one of the greatest vehicles, the greatest tools you can use to open yourself up. You know, I think we'd all agree for the most part, yeah, you got to have your tools as a writer. You know, you got to have your game. You have to know your toolbox. But still, you know, you have to be open to catching the ideas that, you know, are the fodder for your story. When you write it down in a notebook or it stays in the back of your head, you know, you learn to be open and aware and present. And the amount of focused productivity with the practice that I do will multiply over and over and over again. So it's good for you, Buddha mud. Bada bing, Buddha mud. It's good for you. It's like soup.
Zone
soup for Buddha
bud.
Yeah.
Buddha bud. Well, Mr. Michael, I'm gonna come down. I'm gonna visit you, and we're gonna sit there and do nothing. How's that sound?
Sounds good, man.
Oh, dude, it was a huge pleasure having you come on, and I keep threatening to come down and visit you downtown. I'm gonna do it. So, keep the telephone line open, all right?
All right, brother.
All right, thanks a lot. Catch you later. All right, that was Michael Dukes, and. Well, I get a kick out of that guy. I'll tell you what, Awkward Paper Cuts, check that out. Listen to his podcast. Read his website. Sit quietly in a fucking chair for 5 minutes and turn your goddamn phone off. How does that sound? Well, next on the show, we're going to talk to Janice Lee. And Janice is fucking cool, man. She's got a lot of great stuff going on. I've come into contact with Janice most recently because she's running this fantastic website with Peter Tiris called Entropy. But I can read this bio here for you, and damn it, Janice has got a lot of great stuff going on. Lots of books, which I'll probably pronounce most of them wrong. But Damnation from Penny Ante, which is one of the most recent. Looks to be a great book. I got that coming in the mail. She's a review editor at HTML Giant, and she's got some stuff going on editing at Jaded Ibis Press. So, welcome to the show, Janice Lee. Pull her up here off the switchboard. How you doing, Janice?
Good. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm doing good. I'm drinking a lot of water tonight for some reason. What's the haps? Where are you calling from?
Well, I'm in L.A. I'm a little bit sick, so I just, like, downed some DayQuil and water, so hopefully I don't sound too out of it.
Oh, that's okay. I think I'm out of it today. I'm just so fucking out of it today.
It might be the natural state of things.
Yeah, it's just the way the world is today, I think, you know. Yeah, it's nice to talk to you. We got to talk a little bit of AWP. We got to party a little bit with a little bit of... Eddie Rathke was there, Kyle Munz, Sidelinger. It was a fun night. It was a real fun night. And
it was.
I feel like I'm still recovering in a way from that. Just that whole trip, you know, the whole trip out there. So, yeah, you got some really cool shit going on. Let's dive right into this whole Entropy thing. For people who don't know what the Entropy site is, can you kind of like give a crash course?
Yeah, I mean, so it's brand new. I'm running it with Peter Tierris, and he was just Facebooking with me and kind of trying to make me laugh. So he's listening in right now. But, you know, we decided to start the site because we wanted kind of a literary site that also covered non-literary things and sort of was also a community. And so we're really excited to see how it's grown. I mean, it's only been around for 2 or 3 weeks, and it's already a whole community has been built around it. We're getting really good content. It's covering everything from, you know, your traditional kind of book reviews, but also video games and music and film and travel pieces and all sorts of different types of things. Like Christopher Higgs is doing this really awesome series, for example, where he's doing this like Ubu Roulette. So he's kind of playing roulette with the films on Ubu Web and just kind of picking them at random and writing about them. And we've got, you know, stuff about pop music and all sorts of things. So far it's been a lot of, fun. Yeah.
Yeah. It kind of seems to me like I would describe it kind of like, if you took AV Club and like broke a bunch of glass and then had AV Club, like kind of like walking around with anarchy symbol painted on the back of its leather jacket instead of, you know, this cartoonish thing. I did it. I think it's cool.
Peter was kind of pitching it initially as like HTML Giant meets Kotaku, which I think was getting people excited.
Sure. Oh, man. So yeah. I'm fucking out of it. Somebody hit me in the head with
something. You and the
phone. We suck. I want to ask you about Damnation. Is that your most recent book that came out?
That is my most recent book. It's a little bit different of a project for me. My first two books were, they were a lot more intentional for me. I kind of set out to do projects. It's kind of, you know, science fiction elements in them. Damnation didn't start out as a book. I was just really depressed and watching these films over and over and over again, the films of Bellatar, and just kind of taking notes and things, and the notes kind of turned into these vignettes and stories. The editor at Penny Ante approached me. She had read my first two books and asked me, do you have anything in the works? I'm like, well, I'm working on this weird thing that's kind of like therapy and obsession and expressive, and she's like, I want to see it. And so, you know, that was sort of the first book I wrote on a deadline, which is a little bit stressful for me. But, that's what it is. So it's a weird kind of series of stories that take place in the world of the films of Bellatar. And really, it's about a lot of things, but it's also about my obsession with the films.
Hey, I always do this great professional, you know, thing. Like, I'm interviewing people about books that I haven't read yet. You know what I mean? I think I'm supposed to read these books and then be like, oh yeah, this part of the book with this, and then people listening can gain some insight and they're like, oh, you know, what are you gonna do? You know,
it's no problem.
Yeah, well, fuck it. You're talking about a little more about books before that were a little more purposeful. You said you're purposely writing books with sci-fi elements. I remember we had a conversation about something where somebody was a cyborg in a story or a plot.
That might have been my first book.
Yeah. What was the first book?
So the first book is called Carol Talkies. I have no idea how you pronounce that word. I don't know. It's like an old word, and who knows how to pronounce it. I don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's the story. It's about a cyborg, and with that, I sort of had a premise that I was starting out with. I had just read this book called The Breakdown of Consciousness, or The Origin of Consciousness and the Breakdown of the Bicameral Mind by the psychologist Julian Jaynes, and that sort of, I was thinking a lot about consciousness and perception and doing all this research and reading about alchemy. And I just had this question, which was sort of like, what would consciousness be like for a cyborg? And then I sort of added the element, what would consciousness be like for a cyborg who has a camera for an eye and doesn't get to control what she sees or what memories she retains? So that was sort of the question I started out with, and then the rest of the book was just sort of me trying to answer that question. And it doesn't really get answered, but that was sort of the investigation into that.
That's my favorite kind of art. You know, when you try, as soon as you try to answer questions, you know, you just I get kind of lost with that. ambiguity is gold, you know.
Right, and then it just starts to turn into all these things. So, you know, I mean, I started with that, and then I had to read like 50 other books, and it became this, you know, really complicated thing where I was no longer really answering the question, but it was still fun, and so.
Yeah.
You know, so that's what the book is, though. That's the product that came of it.
and you know, it's like the question of that's always coming around. What's happening now? What are it seems like you're kind of like messing around with a lot of deep stuff, which is really really interesting. You know, scratching the surface of consciousness and all that. What are you pursuing now? Where are you headed?
That's a good question. I feel like I'm still recovering a little bit after Damnation. It ended up being a lot more personal of a project than I thought it was going to be. And it kind of ended up changing the way that I think about literature and relate to language. It sort of changed my relationship with language. So I hadn't really been able to write anything, so I'd sort of only been working on like assignments or short pieces here and there, like reviews and stuff for Entropy. And I'm working on a couple different collaborations. But I hadn't really been able to write anything for my own projects. And I may or may not have broken my writer's block last weekend in the middle of being drunk and watching Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. by myself. So we'll
what
see
happened?
If that turns into something. You know,
what?
I was just kind of feeling, you know, emotional and just happened to be watching the show Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't know if you've seen it. It's like a new Joss Whedon show.
Is it any good? Is the show any good?
You know, it's entertaining. It's got ups and downs.
Yeah.
You know, like if you're a fan of the Avengers and that kind of stuff, it's a lot of fun. But,
yeah,
you know, there was this the scene that came on, and it's been a little bit weird because one of the plot points this season has been this kind of mysterious entity putting things into people's eyes to control them, kind of like having computer interfaces inside of them, which is sort of just like my first book. There was that weird connection, and there was this scene where this guy who was supposedly had died. It's kind of, he wakes up in this kind of dark room. His leg's been amputated. He's kind of all like burnt and fucked up, and he recognizes himself in the mirror. And then these words kind of flash across his vision, which kind of lets us know that, you know, he's been operated on and all of that. And something about that scene kind of struck me. So I wrote this whole long thing from the point of view of this character. I don't know what will happen with that, but it was sort of nice to write something.
Yeah, I know the feeling, and that can happen, and it's such a strange thing when all of a sudden you're just like, wow, I'm like stuck. How the fuck did this happen? And I remember I had like writers. I guess you know whatever. I don't know if I believe in writer's block so much. You just kind of like. Get kind of out of it for a little while. That's mostly what I think really happens. You just kind of get out of it. But I remember I was like looking at like weird but true things in the newspaper, and it'd be like these ridiculous things in like crappy local papers. And it was like, you know, there was this one thing. It was like a peacock wandered through the drive-through of a Burger King in Long Island, and these kids that worked at the Long Island Burger King like went outside and this kid jumped the fence and like strangled the peacock because the kid was schizophrenic and he thought the peacock was a vampire. And I was reading that in the newspaper and I was like, oh my god, it's so fucking ridiculous. You know, how could you even write that down? It doesn't even sound like fiction. But sometimes just dipping into like crap like that, you know, it's like looking at like help wanted ads and like obituaries and stuff.
Right.
There's so many like jumping off points and prompts for things, you know. So that's why it's super cool when I hear you say that a show like, you know, Marvel, S.H.I.E.L.D.
Right, of all things, it was kind
of
like shitty
popular
TV.
Yeah, of all things, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't want to say that. I didn't want to say shitty popular TV because, you know.
Well, that's basically what it is. But, you know, it apparently that's what helps, so.
I'm a fan of the shitty stuff, you know. I'm a fan of the weird but true section and the Craigslist ads, stuff like that. You look at that and you say, oh, there's a story. There's a lost soul. So what happens in Los Angeles this time of year? How's the mood there?
How's the mood? Well, you know, it's actually been really warm this week. But also, just it's been warm all year. We didn't really get a winter this year. So, you know, we've been getting kind of patches of rain here and there, and I love the rain. But it's been hot this week, you know. I've been driving around and, like, sweating.
Yeah. When I think of Los Angeles, I usually think of the movie Falling Down with Michael Douglas. Like, just have you ever seen that great movie?
I don't know if I've seen that one.
It's you remember the guy that directed Batman, like, well, Batman and Robin or whatever, like Joel Schumacher, which is like the horrible Batman where there's like a smoke machine in every shot, and I think George Clooney's Batman and Chris O'Donnell's Robin. It's just like the worst piece of shit Batman thing ever invented. Well, anyway, he directed this movie with Michael Douglas, who basically just like loses his mind in Los Angeles and goes on like a one man. Like, I don't want to say a killing spree. I don't think he kills anybody, but he just goes like a rampage through Los Angeles. So anyway, check that out. And then don't go on a rampage.
Okay, I will. Okay.
You know?
I'll try not to.
Yeah. You know, do not go on a rampage. So it was my goal to get everybody to read on the show for some reason. I get like that sometimes. Do you think I could get you to read something?
Yeah, I can read like a couple short things from Damnation because I think, let's see here. I don't have my book. I've got my computer. So I'm sort of touching around on here. So yeah, I'll read a couple of the really short pieces from Damnation. So this one's called, Confession. Sometimes one willingly enters a dark and empty space. The creaking of the loose boards below, the phantom moonlight above. I had a dream that I was carrying a wounded deer in my arms. He lay there limp, depending on me completely and solely for the permission to go on living. And I dropped him into the river. How can you forgive an act like that? Why were we only made to die? And this one's called The Dogs. And the whole book's kind of organized in these little short or longer vignettes. The machinist stands outside his front door, his hand held outwards to feel the rain on his palm. In his other hand, he holds a cigarette, pulls it up to his mouth, brings it back down again. Another one of those wretched dogs wanders the roadside for scraps, probably looking for a place to hide from the rain as he is discovered by a neighbor and shooed away like a beast, its mangy fur, after all, a sign of filth and ruin. He watches the dog approach a puddle to take a drink in the now torrential rain. It is a pitiful effort, perhaps, but an effort nonetheless. The biggest mistake you can make is thinking that you're better than him, he thinks, that you're better off than the dog on the street. This, my friend, is the most dangerous thing you can convince yourself of. He convinces himself that he won't allow himself to make such a mistake, that through the indetermination of the rain, he understands what it means to repeat oneself, to enforce a vulnerability, to double back on a path and find oneself back at a familiar crossroads, and to head down the same path like a horse following the carrot hanging above his nose. What do you think? Do you want me to read another one?
Yeah, read another one.
Let's see. I'll read this one. It's called The Fight. Sounds of a struggle outside. You can barely make out anything out of the ordinary amidst the other noises, but you hear something. There's loud yelling, and as you turn to look out the window, you see what everyone else has noticed who, everyone in the bar and everyone outside, they've all paused to see what's happening on the street. The two men are barely yelling. It seems like they're grunting, and even their movements appear so barbaric, like animals. Neither one can throw a proper punch, so you just see the awkward struggle, arms wavering about, kicking, biting, an elbow, a knee. The slightly smaller man, they're about the same height, but one is much less heavyset in his build, manages to find an advantage, manages to get his arms around the other man's neck, manages to squeeze. The larger man doesn't seem to be doing anything about it anymore. And in a few moments, it's no longer a man on the street, but a limp body. Everybody witnesses the event. Everybody sees clearly what just happened, including a police officer who happened to be taking a cigarette break outside his office on the next block over. The officer puts out his cigarette and goes back into the office, expecting to file a report. But he waits there for an hour, and then two, and then it's time to close up. No one reports the murder. I think that's it.
And this is all in this whole world inspired by these films.
Inspired by the films, yeah. And some of them are kind of like alternate realities of things that happen in the films, and some of the characters are from the film. Some of them are just sort of inspired by the mood. Cool. So it's kind of a wide spectrum, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a series of jumping off points. It's a series of, you know, flipping around on a TV. It's a prompt. These movies are a prompt. It's cool. It's badass.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really cool. It was really cool to talk to you. And I hope you still don't get any more winters in Los Angeles. I hope that's a permanent thing. All right, Jared. Keep it real. All right.
All right. Thank you for having me. Thanks so much.
Yeah, take care. All right. Next on the show, we're going to talk to Court Bledsoe, who is a Maryland guy, which is kind of a good choice. I think Maryland's definitely a good choice. So Court is the author of 8 books, 750 an Hour and Curses, Last Stand in Zombie Town, Sunlight, Naming the Animals, Collected Stories, Anthem, Poetry, Want and Need, Poetry, Leap Year, which is poetry. And he's been nominated for Pushcart a lot of times, and just doing really good with these Story South's Million Reader Award. 2 stories selected for that. So welcome to the show, Court Bledsoe. How you doing, man?
Good. Thanks for having me.
What's new?
I wish I had something good to say. Same old, same old.
Well,
broke.
Well, you know, I don't have anything good to say here. This is like somebody dropped an anvil on me today. You know, it's one of those kind of days. Somebody, a runaway bread truck run me over in the street, something like that. You were saying you've had a really crazy week. Is it still going crazy?
Oh, yeah, just busy. We're job hunting. We're about to move. My wife and I are both teachers, and the year is coming to an end, so we've got all that stuff to wrap up and try to desperately cram in everything we didn't get to.
That's great. So I want to ask you a couple questions about this. This is such a great title for a book, the $7.50 an Hour and Curses. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah.
That's such a great title.
It's like an urban fantasy. I don't know if it's a straight parody. I mean, I meant it to be a parody. I don't know if I accomplished that or if it's just, you know, kind of funny. But
yeah.
It's part of a series, it's, you know, there's so many, urban fantasy books out or, you know, about vampires and werewolves and all this stuff. So I just wanted to kind of play with that genre in a, not really a mocking way, but to kind of kick it in the ass a little bit. So... yeah, that's the first one. The second one is coming out later this year.
How do you kick it in the ass? Now we're talking about urban fantasy, which is like a term I wasn't really too familiar with. I guess urban fantasy is kind of you mentioned vampires and werewolves, and you know, not to say like Twilight, but is that kind of what urban fantasy is, like the Twilight book?
Yeah, it is. I guess Twilight isn't really urban, but you know what I mean? Yeah, it's this.
Yeah,
it's basically that kind of stuff. It's like fantasy, but it's modern. And so, you know, Twilight is god-awful. And I'm not saying that, like, as an elitist snob or anything. It's just god-awful. And somebody who writes really good fantasy kind of parodies is a guy named Terry Pratchett, who... if you've never read him, well, he's great. But he also wrote a book with Neil Gaiman called Good Omens, which is like, have you read Good Omens?
I haven't read any Neil Gaiman at all.
Okay,
it's
like
his name keeps popping up, of course, you know.
Yeah, sure. Good Omens is like the Omen if Monty Python had done it. It's like, you know, it's funny as hell, and. You know, it has those tropes of the, you know, the genre and everything, but, you know, it's funny, and it's kind of a parody. So stuff like that is really kind of where I was coming from. Not that I'm not trying to I think that's, like, the funniest book I've ever read, so I don't think I'm quite on that level, but that's kind of what I was going for. So, you know, it's one reviewer talked about how 7-15 hour plus curses, like, doesn't have the, you know, really cliched love triangle. It's just this, it is a female narrator, but, you know, she doesn't hook up with anybody. She's just trying to do her thing, and she's kind of a failure, but she still, you know, is in this situation where she has to face a lot of crazy shit, and she, you know, she's just like a normal person instead of, you know, magically... Suddenly I'm able to use a sword and, you know, fight off these magical creatures. Like, she's just a person in that situation. So that kind of stuff is what I was going for, just to be more realistic, but at the same time to have fun.
That's, you know, that's what's lacking in a lot of books is the fun. I think writers forget about that a lot. They just, you know, I don't know. Less and less people read every year. And I know I've put down a lot of books because they're not fun, you know.
Yeah, especially it's kind of interesting. I found, like, with sci-fi and hard fantasy, especially, people will get really offended by people like Terry Pratchett, or, you know, if it's funny or if it's not seeming to take the genre seriously. They get really offended. They'll come after you with their double-headed, you know, battle axe or whatever. And,
literally.
And it's, you know, on the flip side, you know, I'm primarily really a poet, and so, you know, I wrote some schlock. Really, I mean, that's what most people would call it. But you know, it's fun. I mean, you gotta enjoy it. So.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not enjoying it. Who the fuck is gonna, right? It's kind of like that.
Exactly.
So there's like this big appeal to me of kind of what you're talking about, what you're doing, where it's like you have this thing which you know you're kind of poking fun at, but you're only halfway poking fun at it, and then the joke is like a joke inside the joke, you know, where it's like I'm kind of being sarcastic about the whole goddamn thing, so. Can say whatever the hell I want, you know, or you can interpret this however you want. But yeah, the danger then is there, you know, you get battle axed in a Walmart parking lot.
Which, I mean, really is a danger for anybody.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, doubly so for a writer.
Yeah. Yeah, most definitely, man. It's been my goal here tonight. I'm trying to get everybody to read. Can I pry some reading out of you? You can read whatever you like. You know, I'm not gonna. I'm talking about these this specific thing, but please, whatever you're in the mood for.
Okay, well, I didn't. So it's going to be an abrupt change of pace. Because I don't even have a copy of my novels on hand at the moment, but with me. So my newest poetry collection is called Riceland, and I was thinking I'd read a couple of poems from that.
Yeah, why don't we talk about Riceland first a little then? Why don't we set it up instead of just jumping in? Because I made you talk about all this urban fantasy stuff, so now maybe I can make you talk about your poetry book. What's going on with me?
The other stuff's Riceland? Probably more fun. But
yeah.
Okay, so Riceland, it's different. I mean, I don't know if anybody's read any of my other poetry, but it's very different from what I usually do. Again, I'm usually, I hate to sound like a dick, but I'm usually pretty funny. I'm usually pretty, following kind of the New York school in a general sense. But Riceland is a total change of pace. It's there's a lot of narrative poetry, some formal stuff. And it's really based on my childhood growing up on a rice farm in eastern Arkansas. So, So it's about...
So, yeah.
So we've been talking about urban fantasy, and now we can go to rice farm. So,
yeah. Well, it's urban fantasy to people who don't know about rice farms, kind of, right?
Exactly.
I don't know. Fucking A right, man. All right, read some.
And that's what I would say, and I would read poems from it at these venues, which are, more experimental, and people are getting up there and doing all kinds of crazy shit, and then I would say, okay, well, this is going to be totally different from anything you've heard.
Yeah.
Which is true.
It's about rice. So, A right, man. All right, well, let's hear some of this.
All right, so I'm going to, I don't know if I have to explain too much of it. I'm going to start off with a poem. It talks about the actual farming a little bit, but it's really more about, my experience. So I think it'll pretty much, I'm scanning it, I think it'll pretty much make sense. I guess the one thing that you need to understand is that rice farming is about the control of water. After the rice comes up, you flood the field, and then you just have to control the water. And so that's what most of the farming is wading through mud and all that stuff, shoveling and controlling water. So there you go. So that makes sense. All right, so the first one is called Roaches. When I was a boy, I heard roaches sing. It only happened at night after Mom got sick and went back to St. Louis. Dad worked long hours and stayed drunk. Every day I came in from the rice fields, too sweaty to sleep but too tired not to, pressed my cheek to the wall beside the bed because it was cool, and they were in there, singing. This was different from in the fields. I'd heard mosquitoes but never roaches sing. I felt water moccasins stroke my leg like fingers as they swam past. Felt the shovel dribble mud down my back like a heavy breeze. The dull gray levees that stretched out before me that day and would the next. Felt the weight of my father's tired muscles as we dragged him from his truck to bed. The quiet of the house since Mom was gone. I forgot it all and listened to them sing. In the mornings, I woke, staggered into the dusty light of my father's truck and tucked the memory of my nights away under the hard slap of the sun on my back and the drunken jokes of farmers that didn't make any sense. I sank into the mud of those fields and into myself, waiting, until night came, when I could crawl in the bed, press my face against the wall, and listen.
Something
else right there. Thank you. I'm going to do another one. I'll do this one. This is, I think this is pretty straightforward. This is called The Pelican. It was late fall when I first saw the white blur drop to the surface of the stock pond with a low call like a flooded boat motor. It was too big to be anything but holy. Dad said it was lost, said the storm must have blown it there. It's beautiful, I said. It's eating my damn fish, he said, and if it doesn't die, I'll kill it. I worked out plans to stalk him, hide in the back of his truck, and jump out the moment he raised his gun. I was his son. He would forgive me. But all I ever did was sit on the corner post on top of the hill above the pond and watch its silky neck straining down to eat our livelihood. I was his son. 2 days later, the storm came back. Wind scraped the sides of our house like the fingernails of witches, and I sat in the bedroom and prayed. The next morning, I found it lying on the bank, its feet submerged, a catfish hanging out of its beak. I could see the tips of its wings stained black. I could see its white body. I could see it. Should I do another one?
Yeah, please do, man.
Okay, let me find. I'll do this one. This is this is more about, like, so, you know, I obviously, I grew up in a tiny, tiny town. I mean, actually, I grew up in the country, but I grew up near a tiny, tiny town. And there was really, there were really no opportunities there, which is why I left. And so, and this is a poem about the town, the little, I guess the name of the town was Wynn, which doesn't really mean anything, but the kind of slogan of the town was a city with a smile. So I'm gonna read a poem called The City with a Smile. On Highway 64 between Helena and Jonesboro, a giant cross forced on the sprawl of hills dotted with churches and fast food eateries, gas stations and strip malls slowly succumb to vacancy and horizon. Ranch-style houses splinter in all directions. Trash and car washes. Train cars rust in the shimmering heat, waiting for the freight to come back, their tracks more walled than line. Teenagers cruise from the bowling alley to Sonic and back, park by Walmart to Neck, or drive out to Big Eddie Bridge to smoke pot and complain while lightning bugs dance in the trees. There's high school football and judging others. There's Jonesboro, Memphis, Little Rock, if you can drive. Summer fairs and satellite TV. Further out, there are rice fields, a handful of dwindling factories with their bags already packed for Korea. Wynn, this sleepover town near enough but not Memphis, founded on a spot where a train derailed. We thought we were tough because we spent one dry-eyed year in the rundown junior high across the tracks before moving to the new one in the middle of town. We were wiser than Solomon in our packs, more concerned with the price of each other's shoes than the usage, already learning to turn up our noses at the secrecies of the heart. We were killing time until graduation or 16 and old enough to drop out without losing our licenses. VOTEC meant half days today, but honors meant a future. Teachers whispered to the few of us who'd listen, study hard and you can go to college and never come back.
I like that. Study college, and you can learn to never come back. That's great. Where are you headed next? You're moving, you said.
Yeah, we're not sure. We're either going to D.C. or right now we live on the campus of a school, and
yeah.
So we're going to move into Baltimore proper or go to D.C. This is another reason why this week has been crazy is, you know, we've got interviews and we're supposed to hear from places whether they've decided to, you know, take us or not. So it's all still kind of up in the air.
Well, I wish you the best of luck, man.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, and it was a pleasure having you on the show. Thanks for reading.
Yeah, thanks so much.
And listen, I hope you don't get battle axed in a parking lot. I hope I don't either.
I hope nobody does.
Yeah. Let no one get killed by irate fantasy listeners. So, so yeah, that was the show, man. Thanks to Court Bledsoe. Man, big thanks to Court Bledsoe.
he read from his new book, Riceland, which sounds pretty awesome. Thanks to Janice Lee for coming on the show. She read from her book, Damnation, and check out her site, Entropy. Michael Dix came on, too. Michael Dix of Awkward Paper Cuts and all the other Michael Dix stuff that Michael Dix does. Robert Vaughn is our first guest, author of Attics and Basements, and he's got another great book that came out last year called Diptychs and Triptychs. So if you're really starved for stuff to read, actually buy everybody's book that was on this fucking show tonight. They all got some great books out. So yeah, I don't know what's going to happen with the show for a while. It might let people on a hiatus for a little bit. I don't have any anybody's book for a while here. So yeah, enjoy the spring weather this summer. And jump into a swimming pool with a cool beer in your hand for me, alright? Catch you later.